This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
It's better over here.
AT&T customers, switching to T-Mobile has never been easier. We'll pay off your existing phone and give you a new one free. All on America's largest 5G network. Visit T-Mobile.com/carrierfreedom to switch today.
Pay off up to $650 via virtual prepaid MasterCard in 15 days. Free phone up to $830 via 24 monthly bill credits plus tax. Qualifying port-in trade-in service on Go5G Next and credit required. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance and required finance agreement is due.
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated, where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
And now, SCORE senior football analyst Hub Arkish on Sports Radio 670 The Score.
Indeed, Russ Matero wouldn't lie, doing his best John Facenda. NFL Films music behind him, as stentorian as his tones could be. We welcome, on the guest hotline, presented by Circus Sports Illinois, he is Hub Arkish. How are you, Hub?
I am doing very well, Steve. How are you?
I am so bitching it hurts. I'm going to need a doctor's note. So, the week that was at Halas Hall, where does it rank in weeks that you've covered?
Oh, I don't know. I've seen some pretty weird weeks at Halas Hall.
I know.
Over the years.
I want to hear them because for the kids at home, they need to know this.
It wasn't strange because we've seen these types of things happen before, but it was definitely different. It was, I think, what we all pretty much expected after last week, and I think that they handled it as well as they could. There's no good way to handle what's going on right now, and but it wasn't as uncomfortable or as out of place as it could have been. So I think they handled it fairly well.
Thomas Brown is the offensive coordinator, guy, the passing game coordinator, and the passing game sucked. I guess, a lot of it sucked. You were going to come across that problem with anybody, I guess, you promoted to offensive coordinator. What do you think of his selection, and what do you expect to see from his offense tomorrow?
Well, let me start, Steve, by saying we can't say for sure whether the passing game sucked or not, because all we know is that the plays were called, but we don't even know what plays were called. So, it was a problem. There's no question about that.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't weigh too much on that in evaluating Brown. As a matter of fact, what I've seen this week, I think they're already improved at offensive coordinator. I like some of the changes that he's made because I think that they will benefit this young team. But now, until we see him run a game, until we see what happens tomorrow, it's hard to say what's next. But things aren't going to get worse, I can tell you that. I think that they're in better shape at the offensive coordinator position today than they were a week ago tomorrow.
What changes have you seen that gives you reason for optimism?
Well, one of the things we've learned is that what's happening is that the offensive players were having three separate meetings, meeting by position groups instead of meeting as an offense, and he's changed that. He said, we're a group, we're a team, and we're going to meet together, we're going to do everything together. And I think that's a good starting point because what we don't know, there was not nearly as much negativity going on in the room that as people were suggesting. There weren't really any players questioning coaches or anything like that, at least from talking to them almost every day and what I was hearing, what they were saying. But that said, there's no question that players were unhappy with their losing streak and with the way they were playing and with what was going on right now. And so from that regard, I think that it was a better week. It was a calmer week. I think everybody felt better. Everybody felt they had a fresh start. And, so again, hopefully that can bode well for tomorrow.
My guest is Hub Arker, senior NFL analyst for The Score. I'm Steve Rosenblum. This is Saturday Suckage, Bears-Packers tomorrow at Soldier Field. Hub, I want to play for you something that I thought was the most interesting and at the same time most damning thing to come out of Halas Hall. It's from Keenan Allen asking about, he's being asked about Shane Waldron and his time here.
For me, I'd probably say just probably too nice of a guy. I think OTAs, training camp, he kind of fell into a trap of letting things go, not holding people accountable, and obviously those things get into a little slippery slope.
I think what Keenan Allen said is not just the coaches being too lax, but the players themselves weren't professional enough to follow through on everything to make sure all of their details were taken care of. What did you think of what Keenan Allen said? How far does this ripple?
Well, see, I want to be clear on one thing, because I think there's so much, not from you, but from some people, bad reporting coming, that I want to be careful. Keenan was only talking about one coach. He wasn't talking about the coaches. He was talking about the offensive coordinator, Shane Waldron, and I think it's important to be clear on that, because I don't think that this overall coaching is necessarily as bad as a lot of people are trying to make it out to be. But again, there was definitely a problem on the offensive line. And what Keenan just said is pretty much exactly what I thought I was seeing, you know. And so it confirmed for me what I suspected, you know, part of what I suspected was wrong, and it's why they've had to make a change. And I think the way Brown has jumped into that is with some of the changes he's talked about making, is I think he would agree that that was a concern, and that that's something specific that he is going to try and improve on.
So the Bears made a big deal out of being coached. Bears players did, and the sort of that was code for start making everybody accountable and stop plays and run them again until they're run right. There was a lot of that kind of taking care of business. There was also something that came out of it. A texture brings it up too. The idea of scripted plays, which doesn't seem that foreign, but at least gives your offense, even if you don't run those exact plays, you kind of give them an idea of the way you want to attack, in this case, the Packers. I don't know if Thomas Brown talked about it in great detail, what he said about that, how he plans to approach it. But first quarter scoring, first drive stuff, the Bears definitely need help there. Do you have any indication what changes there?
Yeah, I'm not sure yet. Thursday is the one day I can't be there, because that's the day we do the Pro Football Weekly TV show. And I'm not sure if Brown talked about it then or what he's going to do. But I can tell you that way too much has been made of this, because scripted plays are handled differently by each of the 32 NFL teams. You know, and there are a number of teams that do it the same. There are a number of teams who don't. There are some who think it's more important than others. But I think this is one of these stories that has taken off that just was too much, you know, because it wasn't the reason they were struggling. But that said, again, what I've heard so far with Brown is that I think most of what he's going to do is going to be different from what Waldron was going to do. So I think you could guess that there is going to be at least a smaller script of plays to start the game, but I don't think that's a given, and I don't think every good coach in the NFL would agree with you that that's an issue or not an issue, depending on how it's handled.
Well, it's an issue if your players think it's an issue. That's what, and I was looking at it from that standpoint. They thought it was a big deal.
And I agree. You're right. You're right about that. No question.
And so that's where I was going with that, because if he saw what happened, he knew what happened, he heard what happened, he saw what changed, and maybe for his own, for a way to connect with the players on yet a different level, is, all right, we're doing this, and here's the way it goes. Let me ask you something, because it seems like more people have come around to what you had said a month ago about Caleb Williams' accuracy, perhaps more accurately, his inaccuracy, and becoming that kind of thrower, becoming accurate. He wasn't that guy, or wasn't what some of us thought he was. More people are coming around to seeing that as being revealed. He's been exposed that way. How do you look at him now, and where does this go?
Well, it was obvious to me that he wasn't as accurate as he was in college, you know, going back 4 weeks early on. Not every throw, not every game, but that was an issue. But again, now I tend to, you know, put that more on the way Washington was running the offense and the plays he was calling and what Williams was comfortable with than necessarily being worried about his accuracy. We have too much tape, too much to look at to know that what made him the number one overall pick more than anything else is the way he throws the football. So the fact that his accuracy has been off talks to me more about what's been wrong the last 3 or 4 weeks and why they realized they had to make a change on the coaching side. And now we'll see if that improves. We'll see if it improves tomorrow. You know, the Packers' pass defense isn't great. It's not terrible. But he better have some success tomorrow. If he looks exactly the same tomorrow, then I think it's time to start worrying a little bit more about Caleb Williams. But what I've seen so far from Caleb Williams through 9 weeks, I'm more impressed than I am concerned.
Hub Arkush, senior NFL analyst for The Score, is right here on The Score's airwaves. I'm Steve Rosenblum. This is Saturday Suckage. When you talked about Pro Football Weekly and your taping, I know that Wayne Larrabee, longtime friend, had been part of that, and he's the Packers announcer. He had mentioned the Packers' struggles in the red zone, and the Bears actually have, of all their crappy numbers, they're a red zone team to be. They can do some damage, and they can handle, it seems, the Packers in the red zone. And I don't know if that's where tomorrow you got to assume the Bears have a chance to win simply because they're playing the football game and it bounces funny. But I think that's a critical area. How would the Bears take advantage of that? How would that play out, do you think?
Steve, it's funny about the way you let in, because I'm sitting in the parking lot at Walker Brothers getting ready to walk into my annual lunch meeting before the best rivalry in football with my former broadcast partner, Wayne Larrabee, so I can learn more. So we can both learn more about the Bears and the Lions, or Bears and Packers, I should say. But at any rate, reference to what you asked. Yeah, I mean, you know, this is why I get so frustrated with some of this. The Bears' defense is still one of the better defenses in the league. Their third down defense in particular has been very good. You know, they haven't played as well as a group the last 2 weeks as they did the first seven. But at the bottom line, there are things that the Bears were doing well to get to 4-2, even though it was against bad teams. You can't rule that out either. But this rush to start firing and getting rid of, and you know, now people are talking about whether they like Ryan Poles or not. I think that's nuts. Right? Nothing has changed with what Ryan Poles has done in the last couple of weeks. But yes, there are some things on defense that the Bears are still doing very well, and that could be the key matchup tomorrow, because the Packers have become a run-first team. They're not a pass-first team anymore. Part of that's been because of the injuries. They may still be want to be pass-first, but right now they've been winning with their running game. They, I think, what, third in the league? And the Bears' defense. Now, the run defense was number one in the league last year. It is not this year. I think they're only middle of the pack this year, and so the run defense needs to play better, but they have been, as you point out, very in the red zone. They've been very good, and that's a big help, and hopefully that will continue.
If you were Thomas Brown, what would be the first two or three things you would do with or to help or around Caleb Williams? I don't know if there's confidence that needs to be restored. I don't know how much he's flinching and more worried about don't throw an interception, especially with Xavier McKinney back there and he's got six, or wherever he is mentally and emotionally. But what would you do to make Caleb Williams come closer to the guy you drafted if you were Thomas Brown?
Boy, that's a tough question. I think the first thing I would do, and again, I have not seen the Bears' game plan, you know, any of the last 9 weeks, so I don't know exactly what it's looked like, but I would definitely make sure that it's a smaller plan, that it is focused on, you know, the 5, 6, 7 things they do best running, the 5, 6, 7 things they do best passing, and those should be the only things in the game plan this week, and that he should stay with them. And I think the other thing that you know, makes it harder to predict what's going to happen is we were told yesterday, Flus said, that both starting tackles are supposed to start. And that is a huge part of what happened last week. And again, injuries are no excuse. Everybody has them, and there's a lot of teams that have more injuries than the Bears. But they did not have a starting offensive lineman in the game last week. They're going to have their two starting tackles and at least one of their guards this week, and that could make a big difference. And that would you know, make you want to think, gee, maybe I could try some more things now. No, I would try less. I would take advantage of having those starters and using what they do best and just staying with it and keep with it and try and let your defense keep you in the game. That's the way you were winning for the first 6 weeks, and that's what I would do tomorrow.
You're talking about what you do best, and we talked about the red zone earlier. I made the point that if Thomas Brown, I think if he does nothing else, that one thing Shane Waldron never did was develop the go-to play, the and one play or the and two play that you know you're going to run it, they know you're going to run it, you know you're going to get it, they know you're going to get it, that play. Maybe it's Roschon Johnson carrying behind Doug Kramer, something like that. But that play where you're going to run it and you're going to get it and your team knows it, and that's so important in extending drives and exerting some kind of dominance. If Thomas Brown does nothing else, that has to be established. How close or where would that play be in your view of the Bears?
I think it's top of the list. We were spending enough time together now because we're agreeing on almost everything. You know, I think that has been their biggest problem so far is not the coaching, but the veterans that were brought in to improve this roster haven't performed like the veterans that we think they are. We look at the way DJ Moore, he's not having as good a year this year as he did last year. Keenan Allen was hurt, but now that he's back, he hasn't played like Keenan Allen. They haven't used Cole Kmet. DeAndre Swift has had three really good games, but he's had some bad games too. Their top players who were supposed to be the difference makers haven't been given a chance to be the difference makers, and I think that's the most important thing Brown needs to do for tomorrow. He has to have one or two plays with each of those four guys that I just mentioned that are going to be his go-to plays, because we haven't seen any of those guys making those plays the last few weeks.
Okay, Ryan Poles is not allowed to trade with the Pittsburgh Steelers, and he's not allowed to trade with any team Jim Harbaugh is associated with. Jim Harbaugh traded Keenan Allen. He let it go. He was going to build an offensive line. Jim Harbaugh 6-3. You know this. I'm not telling you anything you don't know about your friend Jim Harbaugh. But it's remarkable that he has done that with, well, I think the Bears have better talent, or when they got Keenan Allen, I thought they did. And I think I gotta wonder next time Jim Harbaugh wants to let a receiver go, maybe you don't want to do that.
Yeah, I, Steve, I wouldn't make too much of that. Keenan Allen, you know, had 1,100 receiving yards last year. You know, so it's, you know, and Jim has done everywhere he's gone what he is doing with the Chargers right now. But he wasn't the one who said, let's trade Keenan Allen. They were just cleaning out the roster. They had to create some cap space, and they did some things there. They were trying to get younger. And you look at the way they're winning right now, it's Harbaugh doing what Harbaugh does. But I wouldn't make too much of the fact that he dealt Allen. Now, I thought you were going somewhere else when you started with that, because I remember, you know, 4 months ago you were pretty upset that they weren't considering hiring Harbaugh here in Chicago.
Yes.
And I was trying to explain, yeah, but Jim wasn't coming to Chicago. He went where he wanted to go. You know, but at the end of the day, Keenan Allen, I don't know if he's a Pro Bowler, but he's definitely an all-pro receiver. He had been hurt for a number of weeks. He's missed some plays the last couple of weeks. He's also made some plays. I still want to see a couple more to see if that's not going to work out the way you hoped it would. Remember, his contract is up after this year. So if he's not the player he once was, he won't be back. And Rome Odunze is the best wide receiver on this team right now. He has been playing the best, you know, and he's going to get better. There's no question in my mind about that. And I'm still a big DJ Moore fan. I mean, I'm not negative on him. He just hasn't been playing well the last couple of weeks, and I think that's because of the way the offense had come apart and the way it was being run.
Now the important stuff, what do you order at Walker Brothers?
Oh, I always go for the omelet, the combo, you know, it's just as much junk as I can get is what I get at Walker.
There you go. Big sloppy breakfast time. That's an excellent Saturday morning pursuit. Hub, I appreciate it. Say hi to Wayne for us. Take care.
Have a good rest of the weekend. Go Bears, we hope.
There you go. That's Hub Arkish, senior NFL analyst for The Score. I'm going to remind you again, Olin Krutz will be here at 1:35. He was on with Spiegel and Holmes, and apoplectic Olin is the best kind of Olin. You're going to hear that at 1:35. You're going to hear Olin tomorrow, the pregame show. The Score, well, it's actually titled the Local Ford Dealers pregame show. It's heard here on 670 The Score, presented by Aurelio's. And the postgame show, from Wonderverse. This will be live at Wonderverse, pre and post. The Great Clips postgame show, presented by Sony Pictures Wonderverse Chicago and TimberTech Decking. That'll be Olin and Patrick Manley and Lawrence Holmes. And you'll be able to get Olin all weekend. Take a break. When we come back, I told you we had receipts. And now we have receipts about how Matt Eberflus got suckered. This is Saturday Suckage. Chicago Sports Radio, 670.
This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details. It's better
over here. After investing billions to light up our network, T-Mobile is America's largest 5G network. Plus, right now, you can switch, keep your phone, and we'll pay it off up to $800. See how you can save on every plan versus Verizon and AT&T at T-Mobile.com/keep and switch.
Up to four lines via virtual prepaid card. Allowed 15 days. Qualifying unlocked device, credit, service, ported 90 plus days with device and eligible carrier and timely redemption required. Card has no cash access and expires in 6 months.
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated, where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
The Score.
It's Saturday Suckage on 670 The Score in Odyssey Station.
Welcome and welcome back. This is Saturday Suckage. I'm Stevie Suckage here on the Big 670 Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. And I told you we got receipts. Matt Eberflus got suckered. Remember how the inexcusably still employed Matt Eberflus talked about Pete Carroll raving about Shane Waldron? We remember. We have receipt. We have it right here.
I had a real long conversation with Pete, you know, when that whole thing went down and we were in the interview process, and he just gleaned about Shane and talked about him at length, about his ability to adapt and adjust and what he did with the quarterbacks that were there in Seattle. So I was very comfortable moving forward with Shane in that. And it's really about his track record, right? You know, so when you have a current head coach or his head coach that was with him say those words about him and talk to me at length about it, and then me watch the tape, and then what he actually did with all those quarterbacks, to me, that's proof.
Matt Eberflus can't read or do his own homework, or he chose not to. Again, inexplicably still employed. Because what's happened with this sadly comical offensive coordinator hire happened last season with the same sadly comical offensive coordinator who was working for Pete Carroll. I've referenced this before. I brought this to the air in the spring and before training camp and in the last month before Waldron was fired this week. And it was all about Waldron's inability to do the job and the Bears' inability to know it. It's as if the Bears got played for suckers again. Always again with Eberflus choosing assistant coaches. This assistant coach that Eberflus chose as his offensive coordinator and just had to fire this week was one of the few times that Pete Carroll called out a coach. He just doesn't do that. He did it almost a year ago, last November in Seattle. And see if this doesn't sound familiar, Bears fans. This is Pete Carroll last November in Seattle talking about his offensive coordinator not doing what he needs to do.
We're looking really hard we have to maximize our people, and we've got to make sure that we're putting them in the best positions for them to contribute so that we can make our momentum felt earlier in the game. I want to make sure that we're maximizing the personalities, you know, and make sure that we're using our guys as well as we can use them. And that's a focus for us.
What does that mean, maximizing your guys, and how do you go about that long?
Make sure that we're choosing the best routes for the guys that we have unique talents, and we got to make sure that we're maximizing that. I feel like we're not. I feel like we're not seeing stuff. You saw the playmaking of Jackson again last night, you know, and he continues to show stuff that separates him from others, and we just need to give him more chances. We've got guys, you know, in different areas of our game that can do stuff, I think, better. Our tight ends could be used better than we've used them in the last couple of weeks, and so we need to get that going again. And we have some real positives. We just got to make them come to life.
Pete Carroll, last November, talking about Shane Waldron not making use, not putting his players in the best position to succeed. Hub and I were just talking, and we talked about one or two plays where each of those playmakers go to plays for them. Get them right, get Caleb right, get the yards. No matter what you, when, no matter what the defense does, you're going to get that play completed. You're going to execute it right. Pete Carroll doesn't do what he just did. Well, what he did on tape, he did it a year ago. His offense was so inexcusably discombobulated that Pete Carroll went hard on it. And what he was talking about is exactly what we saw here with that offensive coordinator with Shane Waldron. So after Pete Carroll said that, what happened? The Seahawks went 3-3. Waldron's offense scored more than 21 points just twice in the last six games. Everybody died in the end. Nobody got the job. Bye-bye. Pete's gone. Waldron's gone. That's the same Pete Carroll who talked up Waldron to Matt Eberflus, who bought the whole fish store. Pete Carroll did something he never did. We knew it. Score listeners knew it. People who could read The Athletic did a long piece on it. Made a point of saying Pete Carroll doesn't do this. And Pete Carroll did it. And everybody except the guy who hired, and Ryan Poles too. So Matt Eberflus and Ryan Poles didn't know this guy had the fatal flaw. Ryan Poles made it a point to surround Caleb Williams, all these pretty shiny things. Look at all these toys. Look at all these weapons. The best situation, number one overall choice as a quarterback has ever come into. And what happened? He chose an offensive coordinator whose history tells you he couldn't do it. And just so you understand, Matt Eberflus didn't do his homework other than talking with Pete Carroll.
I had a real long conversation with Pete, you know, when that whole thing went down and we were in the interview process, and he just gleaned about Shane and talked about him at length about his ability to adapt and adjust and what he did with the quarterbacks that were there in Seattle. So I was very comfortable moving forward with Shane in that, and it's really about his track record, right? You know, so when you have a current head coach or his head coach that was with him say those words about him and talk to me at length about it, and then me watch the tape, and then what he actually did with all those quarterbacks, to me, that's proof.
Uh-huh. That's proof. Well, Matt Eberflus is like Mac Damon's Mike McDermott said in the opening line of Rounders.
Listen, here's the thing. If you can't spot the sucker in your first half hour at the table, then you are the sucker.
Just print that on Eberflus's forehead. You got suckered. I don't know if Pete Carroll did it willingly. Matt Eberflus was talking about how, wow, Pete Carroll said it. You know, when a guy's head coach says it, yeah, maybe he's just looking out for somebody. Maybe just talk, don't you understand there's an asterisk that goes with something like that? Waldron is the guy Eberflus hired. Poles hired, too. Poles had a hand in this. They can't read, didn't do their homework, couldn't do their homework, couldn't pay attention to details. And if you wondered why you've got a roster full of too many players who don't pay attention to details, well, it would seem to start at the top. If your coach can't pay attention to details, do all the necessary homework, make sure he's got everything covered, make sure he knows everything, how can he teach that to his players? How can he demand that of his players? How can it show up on the practice field and in games most especially? you heard Eberflus talking about. Why? We had good practices this week. Really? It sounded so Trestman-like. Oh, we had great practices. I don't know why we sucked. Well, it's quite possible Matt Eberflus doesn't know what a good practice looks like. If you listen to the Bears players, they're telling you a good practice looks like a coach saying, no, you got it wrong. You, whatever number you're wearing, you screwed up. We're going to run this again until everybody gets it right. And you do that. And the Bears didn't do that. You heard players talking about it. You heard players talking about Jalen Johnson was on this station talking about lack of attention to detail. I wish we had guys, and also like a lack of heart, lack of effort, trying their hardest. We played the Keenan Allen cut earlier, and Keenan Allen is talking about too nice a guy. Wasn't demanding. And let things slide. And the players, in some of the most unprofessional ways, didn't take it upon themselves to make sure they had every detail covered. Not all of them, but enough so that you had other players talking about that. And you had talking, they were talking, the comments you heard about run it again were aimed at coaches, but really the subtext was other teammates. Now, if you're a team leader and you can't say that to a teammate, you're a weak team leader. And if you got to urge the coaches, or you're trying to say the coaches didn't make us run that again, players got sloppy, they slacked off, that might be true. But if you're a team leader, you corner that player. You call out the, talk to that player. Dude, you're not doing enough. Dude, you took a shortcut there. You took a hack. There's no room for this. The results on the field, maybe the Bears players were emboldened in their the hacks they took in not covering every detail, not giving every effort, because they won three in a row. We're the ones saying you play crappy teams or horrible defenses. Bears players look at it, we need to win. That's what we do on Sundays. We just need to win. And we won. Three of the worst teams in the league at the time. Three of the worst defenses at the time. That's what happened. And the players felt emboldened by that. And then, when they lost the game in Washington, and the coach said, I confess they did it. I didn't do anything wrong. We just need to execute better. The handoff that Doug Kramer still hasn't gotten, the failure to cover the out, the play before the Hail Mary and whatever Tyreek Stevenson was doing. Talk about cutting corners. Talk about not paying attention, not being focused, not covering your details. It was all there. And the coach who yammered and yammered and blathered about the hits principle, he neutered himself when Tyreek Stevenson got to play the next week. There's no reason this coach should have credibility in that locker room. The players called him out earlier. So his idea was to call a meeting and tell them, don't tell the public how stupid I am. It's pretty much what that meeting was. And when it came to the single most important player, the single best quarterback prospect to walk into Hallis Hall, they got it wrong. The coach and the general manager got it wrong.
Yeah, I'm not going to comment on that.
How do these guys both have jobs? How do they still have jobs? Job one is a quarterback. He's the most important person in Hallis Hall. His progress was the story of this season. The coach leaves him in at the end of games to get pounded. The general manager didn't give him protection with an offensive line. Massive failures regarding the most important player in Hallis Hall. The most important person in Hallis Hall. How do these guys still have jobs? I'll hang up and listen for Trace Armstrong's Humana, Humana, Humana.
What's that?
Yeah. Humana, Humana, Humana. I'm going to take a break. When I come back, well, we're going to do some Roikodamas. It's about my Royko. During the break, parents, tell your kids. I'm Steve Rosenblum, Saturday Suckage, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
Good luck to y'all. I mean, he's a great person.
It's Saturday Suckage on 670 The Score in Odyssey Station.
Welcome in, welcome back. Steve Rosenblum with you, Saturday Suckage. Top of the hour, Mark Grody. Mark Grody's on this show. This is his show, but he's not on the show, but he will be on the show at 1 o'clock. Talk some Bears and Packers. In the meantime, told you we got receipts. This one came from Joey Ice of my Trader Joe's about Roikodamas. Mike Royko. Parents, tell your kids. Explain. Mike Royko, legend. Royko called it. More than 30 years ago, Royko called the Bears coaches you've seen, this parade of Bears coaches. And it's particularly, for me, it rings true during Bears-Packers weeks. One year during Bears-Packers week, I was sent to Green Bay by then Tribune sports editor Dan McGrath. Go find some stories, he said. So I found two. One was the trail of Vince Lombardi, or what's left of it. There was, you can see his office, the black rotary phone sitting on his desk in this Spartan wooden office. But that's in Lambeau at the Packers Hall of Fame, where the desk used to be and what used to be the Packers offices at the time, I believe, was a gas station 30 years ago, 20 years ago. Or maybe a car repair, auto repair place. But so I was trailing. And then there was Vince Lombardi's old house. And you know it's his house because there on the porch, the cement porch, Marie and Vince's name are, his wife Marie, their names are written in the cement, the now dried cement. The other story I found was a Bears bar in the area. I think it was actually Alloway across the river. Vince Lombardi lived in Alloway, not Green Bay proper. But this Bears bar, I cannot remember the name, I apologize, it was owned and run by a Southside guy named Lana. I don't remember his last name. It was being run by his family at the time. He wasn't doing as well. The night I went there was the night that the Green Bay Quarterbacks Club was holding its meeting there in a Bears bar in the Green Bay area, the greater Green Bay metropolis. The walls were decorated with all kinds of Bearanalia. And most prominently, as you might have guessed, if I gave you time, was that famous picture of Mike Ditka giving someone the finger while walking the field. You've seen the shot. You'd have to if you'd lived here at any length of time. Big old Ditka middle finger front and center. And there was that picture hanging from the wall, proudly calling to you, Bears fans and Packer fans alike. Bears fans smile, Packer fans, well, you got the point. But the treat for that particular picture, big and framed, was if you pulled it away from the wall and you turned it around a bit, taped to the back of that picture of Ditka flashing the middle finger was a column from Mike Royko the day Michael McCaskey fired him after the 1992 season. It was classic Royko and an additional dose of Roikodamas. Royko, the things, Royko didn't like seeing Ditka crying and having a lump in his throat. So Royko wrote what Mike Ditka should have said about being fired by Michael McCaskey. It starts like this. Quote, I have good news and I have bad news. The bad news is that I've just been fired by this weenie. The good news is I don't have to work for this weenie anymore. That's what Royko said Ditka should have said when he was fired. And he went on. Quote, you just heard the weenie say that he wants to make a fresh start with fresh ideas. That from a Yale bookkeeper who knows as much about football as I know about ballet. Period. End quote. Royko. But what happened next, as pointed out by Joey Ice at my Trader Joe's, is Royko foretold the next three decades of Bears coaches. Here's the line. Quote, "So he wants to hire a coach who will stand on the sidelines like someone perusing paintings at the Art Institute. Hey, that's a war out there, not a cricket match." Now, you tell me Royko was wrong. Wani and Dick Duron and Mark Trestman, Lovey and all the Mats. Standing on the sidelines like someone perusing paintings at the Art Institute. Royko Domus, he called it in 1993, and here we are in 2024. He knew what they were up to. George McCaskey's Bears carrying on the same tradition. Those coaches don't do anything rude, such as winning playoff games and intruding upon your January plans. There's a damning list that the smothering stench of stupid that asphyxiates Hallis Hall starts with the McCaskies. And there's this. This is George's resume as compiled by regular longtime Suckageer, the Gridiron Assassin. Since 2011, 0 playoff wins, 3 general managers, 4 head coaches, 10 offensive coordinators, and he's on his second team president. Someone else who doesn't know anything about football. He's 2 for 2 there. And the last item that the Gridiron Assassin points out as George's resume, still no Honey Bears. Kids, ask your parents. Tyler, do you know who the Honey Bears were? Tyler Farengel?
I can't recall.
They were the Bears' cheerleading squad. Virginia thought they were sexist and expensive. So she killed the squad. Not literally. She just got rid of the squad after the 1985 season. Kind of rings a bell. The Bears haven't won a Super Bowl since the Honey Bears were eliminated. Connect the dots, people. Make the Honey Bears the chairman of the franchise. Do you think they could do a worse job than George McCaskey? Do you think they could have less institutional knowledge of the NFL than George McCaskey, than the entire McCaskey family? They certainly couldn't hold dumber press conferences and hire more ill-equipped people. And they can only help as cheerleaders. They could multitask cheerleaders during the game and decision makers before and after. Just saying, no Honey Bears, no Super Bowls. Connect the dots, people. We're going to take a break. We come back. I will talk with Mark Rohde because that's what I love to do on Saturday Suckage. He's one of the co-founders of Saturday Suckage. And next hour, Olin Krutz, apoplectic at Olin Krutz. You're going to hear that as well. This is Saturday Suckage. I'm Steve Rosenblum, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4, packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
It's better over here.
After investing billions to light up our network, T-Mobile is America's largest 5G network. Plus, right now, you can switch, keep your phone, and we'll pay it off up to $800. See how you can save on every plan versus Verizon and AT&T at T-Mobile.com/keep and switch.
Up to 4 lines via virtual prepaid card. Allow 15 days. Qualifying unlocked device credit service ported 90 plus days with device and eligible carrier and timely redemption required. Card has no cash access and expires in 6 months.
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated, where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.